On today's chat about agriculture, we're speaking with Samuel, and he is the research director with the McKenzie Applied Research Association. Samuel, first off, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I guess the first question I have for you is that tell us a little bit about the McKenzie Applied Research Association and some of the research currently going on right now.
Thank you. McKenzie Applied Research is a non-profit producer-driven organization. Where our main focus is to provide tools and resources to farmers to increase profits in sustainable agriculture while also increasing the public awareness of agriculture's role in environmental stewardship. Every research that we do at MARA, we have two main goals. One goal is research, which is to create knowledge.
Right.
The other section is extension, which is to share knowledge. So after doing the research, we go out and share the knowledge with the farmers. And all the work that we do at MARA is based on the local needs assessment. Every year we do a survey and then discuss with the farmers what are the challenges they encountered the previous year and how they think MARA could come in to address those issues. So based on the challenges the farmers faced the previous years, we write proposals to the government, get some funding, do research, and share the knowledge with them. So our main goal is to provide the tools and the resources to the farmers so that they can increase profit and sustain agriculture while also making sure there's public awareness of agriculture's role in environmental stewardship.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I guess one question I have is that seeing some of the other research associations around our region and other parts, Clubroot, that seems to be, and also Fusarium, those two things seem to be issues that I've heard from other farmers in the area. Are those two things, Samuel, that you've heard a lot about?
Yes, Fusarium is one challenge farmers do encounter, and but the data I received from the Canadian Grain Commission concerning all the produce we submitted to them last fall, no fusarium was found in the samples that we submitted last fall, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And with the club route that we partnered with Canola Council and then the government of Alberta, no clubroot was found in the samples that we did last summer and fall, which is a very good thing. And diamond black moth and then Alberta worms, which we also did with the Alberta Ag. We had a few cases, but they were lower than the threshold. It's also a very good thing. And with wheat midge, we did wheat midge, and then we collaborated with the Oats College to work on parasitic cysts and nematodes in wheat fields. The report they gave to me was nothing of that sort were found in our region, which is a very good news to hear from such pest and disease survey.
That's very good, yeah.
One important thing I want to stress on is looking at the past where we have no instance of such threats, which are the diseases and then the pest.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the pest, yes, of course.
MARA wrote a proposal to Western Grain Research Foundation, and then we were approved of $300,000, and we've built a new agronomy center in Fort Vermilion, which is first of its kind, and we are very privileged we are there.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So one of the main goals of this particular agronomy center is most farmers over here buy cedar, buy combine, buy sprayers during the auction in Edmonton and Calgary, and then they transport all this into the region. So this agronomy center, we have a particular area where we are quarantining every equipment that farmers are bringing from Edmonton, from Calgary. So we are quarantining them. That's the first step. Second step, we will disinfect everything, making sure there will be no transport of clubroot infested soil on the cedar, anything, and then also to minimize weed seed from these regions. So one of the goals is to disinfect all equipment that comes from these infested areas so we don't transport them to this region.
Okay, so basically by just keeping the invasive species out of the region altogether, then there's no problem, I guess, right? Okay, smart. Okay, and I guess also as well up there, I don't know, and I think some other people told me it may not be as bad, but I'm sure, as you know, Samuel, that last couple of years it's been a very wet up in the Northwest, tough years for farmers. Is it as bad in the Mackenzies maybe as it would be, say, in like the NDF Peace or Northern, or the County of Northern Lights or Northern Sunrise County? Do the drainage issues and the issues of moisture, do you find that there's a lot of that up there in Mackenzie County?
This has been a challenge. I think for the past 10 years, we've had droughts.
Yes.
Combined with wildfires almost every year, but I think 2019 one was
yeah.
So severe that some of the farmers basically lost their livestock, lost their crops, and in addition, they were also evacuated from this area, so which had a more impact on the farmers. But nature was good, and nature recompensated us. Last year, we have a lot of precipitation, and the farmers made very good use of this precipitation. However, we also had another challenge because the precipitation were too much. Most of the crops, especially peas, we realized the peas began to sprout even before harvesting. And then some began, and then some also, because the moisture were too much for the requirements, they began to show some abnormality. So I'm willing to put in more fungicide to control all these diseases that were showing up. So in as much as the precipitation helped the farmers, it also brought additional challenge, which is prevalence of diseases, which also increased their cost of production by producing and applying fungicide. But overall, it was good for the farmers.
Excellent. Also, I guess as another question I have for you is that we also see that the organization will help with grant and funding applications with the provincial government, the federal government, and I think we both know that, Samuel, some of those applications could be very complicated, can't they?
Yes, this has been one other challenge that producers do encounter. Basically, there are quite a number of opportunities for producers, but most of them are unwilling to apply for these funds. And their main reason is we don't have the time. Secondly, this paperwork, asking questions, bringing in your previous records and other information, the producers see this as tedious. So one other thing that Mara does for producers is whenever we get opportunities, we send it to them. Anyone who's interested, just come tomorrow. We will sit you down and we will draft the proposal for you. You do the review, and what you think needs to be edited, we do that together and then we submit. So this has been a tremendous help to the farmers. One example is the dugout, where the government will be given 50% match, which is very good. And for us, being able to successfully get money for 8 farmers to start dugouts, which is very good.
Yeah, definitely. Good. I never even thought of that, so glad you brought that up. And Samuel, I guess one of the last questions I have for you is that I, since we started doing our agriculture show here in late January, we've had a chance to talk to some of the various commissions, advocacy groups, such as the Canola's Commission, Barley Commission, and others. Are you, is Mara in touch with them regularly to find out, and as you mentioned, I guess, share research with each other?
Yes, we work with the commissions, and as we are speaking right now, there are quite a number of research that we are getting funds from. And as I said earlier on, the farmers over here pay check off to the commissions. And so when we do the survey and get the challenges the farmers faced the previous years, we channel all this information to the commissions. This is what our farmers are saying. They encountered problem A, problem B, problem C. So this, we want to address the challenges that the farmers have brought to Mara. So how can we collaborate? So we collaborate with all the commissions, Abeta Bali Commission, Abeta Paws, Abeta Bali, Abeta Canola, and even we even go ahead to even collaborate with the ALDA, which is the newly formed organization, and then Western Green, which is in Sichuan. So we kind of do work with all of them. Let me give you one example.
Mm-hmm.
With one collaboration we did with Alberta Wheat Commission, the farmers in Mackenzie County, they are recording a yield of wheat, 70 bushels per acre, 80 bushels per acre, 60 bushels per acre, which is very good.
Right.
But the issue here is when they take it to the elevator,
you
tell them your protein is very low.
And okay.
You require a protein content of between 13 to 13.5%. So when your protein content do not meet this threshold, there's a price discount.
Oh, okay. Yeah, bulk.
Yeah, the farmers keep complaining. Say, Samuel, can you do something about this? This is what we are facing. So one thing we decided to do is to do research. What has been done in Europe? What has been done in Australia?
Right.
And then we realized, there's something which has been done, which is 4R. Applying the right source, the right rate, the right time, and then the right placement. So we wrote to Alberta Wheat for funding, and they approved.
Oh, good.
What we did was we are looking at applying the nitrogen fertilizer to meet the needs of the plant at its particular stage of growth. The farmers apply all the nitrogen at the initial stage of seeding, and then what we see that there's lodging of the wheat. And whenever there's lodging, it reduces the yield, because when you're combining, most of the crops will be on the ground, so it's difficult for you to combine. So what we did was, we apply at the initial state of seeding, we apply 60 pounds per acre of nitrogen, and then at the tilling stage, we take tissue samples sent to the lab, and then we realize, oh, the nitrogen content is very low, then the plant needs nitrogen at this time, then we apply the nitrogen. And then at the end of the trial, we had a yield of 80 bushels per acre, 90 bushels per acre, and our protein content was 16%, 17%. The minimum we had was 15%. So we've been able to address this issue where we've been able to gain the yield that the farmers are expecting, and also been able to get the protein content even above the threshold. So this, when I presented the data to the farmers, they were so impressed, and they were kind of asking, Samuel, I want to use the same varieties that you used. And I told them, we used two different varieties. Any of these varieties work if you apply the same principle that we did. You get the same results. And so the farmers are so glad. And last year, some did. My board chairman did the same thing. And he told me, somehow I did, and then my protein was 14.5. So I was impressed. Oh, yes.
Wow.
Mara is making an impact. So it's one thing we are doing with a better wheat. Another thing is with Abeta canola, there's been some discussions going on where all canola seeds are treated. And this treatment contains insecticides. And this insecticide, which is neonicotinoid, is systematic, and they are able to translocate to the plant's pollen.
Okay.
What does that? When it gets to the plant's pollen, it becomes toxic to pollinators. So honeybees, bees are all affected, like negatively affected, because it becomes toxic to them. So their activity minimizes, and sometimes they die. And other food, those who are concerned about food also ask them, so why are we treating our canola with insecticide, which can also have effect on the consumer? So there has been some discussions going on concerning this particular thing. So we go to Abeta Canola. We want to do a novel thing. Can we get canola seeds from the seed companies which is untreated? Then
right.
We will see this, and then we want to see if we can get the yield that is expected when you treat. And then one major issue why they treat the seeds are because of flea beetles. And then the Canola Council says they could spend in Canada, they could spend over 30 million, 40 million, 50 million, just as a loss because of this flea beetle. So when they treat this, this is more of safety. And our principle was to seed canola untreated. So what we did was we did different seeding dates. We increased the rate of canola, and then we also did different seed sizes. And the yield that we had, the ones with the lowest yield, we had 30 bushels per acre, and the ones with increased the seeding rate, we had 70 bushels per acre. And this is just 1 year prior. So we will be doing this year, and then next year, once we get 3 year data, so we can project to producers. Yes, we tried this and it worked. Then the food inspection agencies were asking questions. Can't we plant canola without insecticide treatment? We can also project this result to them. So there can be an alternative where canola can also be grown without insecticide treatment.
Okay, that's all very, very interesting stuff. Well, Samuel, thank you. Thank you for taking time to talk with us today and talk to us about Mara. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, this is Samuel. He is the research director at the Mackenzie Applied Research Association, and this is our Agriculture Show.